Hey there, my name is Vosh. I live stream on YouTube and Twitch, and sometimes I even upload the good bits. This is Previously Live. Hello?
Hello.
Howdy.
Hello. Oh, good. I gotta say, I kind of agree with your take earlier that a lot of people on the left are absolutely bonkers about you. So
the only solution is that we have to be we have to be more problematic, you know? That's the only way forward.
I don't think that's particularly the answer, but the idea of reaching across and trying to be nice to them and then they'll stop lying is not going to happen. It's not.
It seems like at this point it's one or the other. But anyway, I have a headache and I don't want to be how do you say? I don't want to take that out on you because that's not your fault. So name, pronouns, what do you got in your mind?
Amara, she, her, and I want to talk a little bit about your coverage on race issues, particularly Black issues.
Hit me up.
I want to establish that this is in good faith, right? I watch way too much of your content. I love it. And this is just a particular gripe with me that I think you might benefit from. So.
Sure, hit me up.
Heck yeah. So, we both agree that white supremacy exists, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we agree that white supremacy is like the structure, like a social structure built specifically to continue colonialism, both outside and here. Right? Like the subjugation of people who are not white.
Yeah, I don't know if it was necessarily built to do so. I mean, I think it's emerged essentially to serve that function. But yeah, semantic.
Yeah. And over time it has changed, but like white solidarity and a lot of concepts that evolve and keep reinforcing white supremacy have those outcomes. And we do know that a lot of those people colonized. Sorry, I wanna. Do we agree that a lot of those people colonized, even if brought here, are still being. Are still second-class citizens, right? Effectively. Black people and a lot of people of color are, for all intents and purposes, second-class citizens, just not as explicitly.
I think that's fairly evocative language. The term second-class citizen generally refers to some kind of, like, state-designated inferiority. We do have, at least nominally, equality here in America and in the West. I certainly agree they're a disadvantaged social group. I just don't want to conflate those terms.
Okay, that's fair. But there we do see the outcomes, and it's very different, right? Like the expectations that you can have for like the constructed white race and the rest regarding the outcomes as a population, right?
Right.
So I want to ask you if, with those things agreed on, do you think that integration for Black people has worked in America?
Yeah, I think it's working. I mean, when we're talking about whether or not it's worked, we have to factor in the alternative. And the alternative to integration would be exclusion. And Black people in America are generally doing better than Black people in Africa. Because even if Black people in America are subject to racism in our country, they're still in the imperial core, as opposed to the imperial periphery, which incurs additional negative consequences. I think that the idea of separatist racial liberty is a really bad one. I can't think of many examples where it's worked, really.
Yeah, my So I have certain concerns regarding this. I am not a black separatist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just, like, I generally try to understand some of the different points of view and, like, black liberation. And so I'm black. I'm queer. Black separatism seems to me like, hey, that could work if it wouldn't lead to a bunch of black cis men subjugating everyone else, because that's usually how it goes. And it turning into extremely bad reactionary stuff, as it probably will be.
I mean, the issue, I guess, is that I feel like a lot of black separatism is kind of rooted in the idea that all black people would, like, get along. You know? I'm speaking generally here, but your average African-American has nothing in common with, like, any average person in an African country. They're American. They share a skin color, but, like, you know, that's it. Language, culture, everything that defines, you know, the sort of affiliation through ethnicity, there's nothing there. It's been hundreds of years. So the idea that, like, black people should just leave and go back to Africa, I mean, first of all, like, as invaders, probably not. Which country would take you? I mean, I just don't get it. I think it speaks to a perceived racial unity that I don't think exists. And I have to fight against that idea, because the idea that people of the same race inherently have things in common is the central myth of white supremacy. That's the outgroup distinction. All white people have something in common, and it's that they're not non-white. And if you start allowing that thinking to permeate other groups as well, I mean, it just seems like it makes the world a more dangerous place.
Something that I would definitely like to note is that we are seeing a lot of this from the perspective of African-Americans. And African-Americans, as you know, displaced and separated from their particular cultures. So their sense of identity is much more vague, rather than I belong to this particular country or ethnic group. It is just, we're just, you know, black Americans, and we came from Africa. So I guess we just go back to Africa.
I feel like technically, you know, most black people in America have been here longer than most white people. Like, you know, a ton of the white population here in America are descendant from waves of Polish and German and Italian and Irish immigration. But most of the black people in America today are products of the slaves that were brought here way before that. And with how much black people have contributed to American culture, all of our cultural experts, from food to music, you know, I mean, there's so much influence there. I feel like, I mean, maybe it's not universal. I feel like most black people feel American, you know? I guess I would agree. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So I don't know, like, where the connection is to Africa necessarily. Apart, I guess, from like direct lineage, but it doesn't seem that strong, you know. Technically, in terms of direct lineage, I'm like four generations apart from the Poles, but I don't know anything about Poland.
So there are several aspects here. So a particular thing regarding an African-American experience, or African-American experience, sorry, is some of them, a number of them, do have a preoccupation regarding their cultural identity. It is not a universal experience, but the idea of having a connection to something that, yes, you were technically taken from, like, you have no choice in any of this. Your family's growing up here, not by choice, but because they were taken, and you are in a country that was built by your ancestors, but not for you, not now, and not back then. It hasn't at any point in time been for African Americans. So the idea of being in a place which is not like that, where your ancestry came from, obviously will have some kind of appeal
I mean, from a Marxist perspective, this country wasn't built for the sake of the working class either, you know?
But these, like, are different factors. You don't conflate these. Like, we're talking about identity here.
I don't think there's a categorical distinction. There's no denying that America was built for, well, I mean, you know, initially it wasn't, like, unless you owned property, you couldn't even vote, right? The idea that you can't have a connection to a country, or that a connection to a country is insincere or diminished because its foundation precluded your group. I mean, outside of, like, monarchs and the descendants of monarchs, or, like, the British crown, I feel like that would apply in varying degrees to everyone, you know? And by the way, like, you know, it's not as though, like, any African country African Americans could go back to would treat them any better. Like, I'm inferring a bit here, but I have a feeling that if I went to Rwanda or whatever, and I was like, hey, how do you feel about 11 million African Americans, like, flooding the continent, who have nothing in common with you, and they're all, like, Americans. Like, they're Americans, right? People abroad hate Americans. We're obnoxious and loud. It's so, I feel like it'd be, I don't know. It's just, mass migration is really difficult to justify in the best of circumstances. I mean, like, Jews tried to flee Nazi Germany before the Holocaust happened. I mean, you know, obviously there's some good examples, but I don't think we're on the brink of, like, a mass culling of Black people. I think we've made a lot of strides towards integration.
Yeah, I would partially agree, but I think that saying that everyone is in a similar position regarding being, that this country is not made for them, is not particularly accurate. The way in which Black people are, like, separated, some would say segregated, from the rest of, like, the wealth and, like, social abilities, that they're significantly separate from the rest of America.
Aren't poor even people, by definition, also separated by wealth and access to opportunity?
But we know that the culture and, like, the place of, like, a lot of white poor people is not the same as white people. I don't think that there is a lot of usefulness in comparing the two. I get that in an economics perspective and in a class perspective, yes. But in a race perspective, they both compound.
Sure,
and
but
that is
I would
important.
Argue the class thing is even more significant. A rich Black person has more access to cultural capital in America than a poor white person does, by a pretty significant degree. Now, that might not have been the case 200 years ago because of, you know, slavery. Even then, if you were a freed slave, wealth takes you a long way in a capitalist country. I don't mean to say they're exactly the same thing, you know. Obviously, we're not, like, literally enslaving poor people, like, the way we enslave Black people. I'm just saying that, like, right now, in terms of a feeling of disconnection from your society, I don't know. I mean, it seems like you're describing the foundations of racist alienation to me, but I agree with that. So make the affirmative argument. Like, why should I take seriously separationist arguments, you know?
I'm not saying that you should take separationist arguments seriously. I'm saying that I'm going to prescribe that they're not the same as Nazis. That comparing the particular issues in Black liberation movements as mimicking Nazis is inaccurate. They're fascist. A lot of them, yeah, are pretty fascist. But we know that all white liberation movements have they have some other problematic elements as a whole, right? Like, white liberation movements, at least in the United States and in most of the West, if not all of it, are based on going back to wholesale genocide of everyone around.
Well, I'm not defending white liberation movements, but there are a lot of Black separatist movements that are also anti-Semitic and do believe that Jews are the ones conspiring to keep Black people down, you know? You have the Hebrew Israelites, for example, who claim they're the true, like, you know, sons of the true, like, I guess, children of Judaism or whatever, the true Hebrews, and that, like, all the fake Jews are trying to keep them down or whatever. They basically, I mean, they basically have the Nazi conspiracy theory, but like, with a couple of the details changed, you know? I don't think that all black separatists are like Nazis, but I do think that their language very often is, at the very least, extremely similar to those of white nationalists, just reversed. And if you add anti-Semitism into the mix, you're basically getting, like, you know, bizarro world Nazism, right?
Yes, you're getting very close. But I think there's a meaningful distinction, because these are particularly bad elements of the black liberalism, while comparing these people to, like, Nazis, which are part of, like, the more heinous white liberation movement, creates a significant warping of what's going on in black liberation movements, because you tend not to cover or talk much about the rest of black liberation, about the more legitimate parts of white liberation. You don't tend to host or have people have conversations about,
I guess,
black
that's
liberation.
Mostly you because talk about the I am the good part of black liberation. I don't really feel a need to bring people on to talk about it, because my positions are the ones which I think best align with that. I mean,
you talk.
If we're talking about, like, the idea of, like, a building for reparations, or, like, building cultural, you know, hegemony and power, addressing economic or institutional bias, dealing with implicit, explicit racism, the criminal justice system, all of that, I think that, I mean, these are my positions, so I don't like bringing people on just to agree with them, right? I usually talk about things when I disagree with them, certainly in relation to other people. So I guess it's possible, I suppose, that you could argue that I paint a bad picture of black liberationism in general by talking with people like Professor Flowers or whatever, but I think that's mostly on them, right? I mean, they're the ones advocating themselves as advocates for black liberation, and the left falls behind them. I mean, the left seems to agree with them when it comes down to it, but they're the opposite of that. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, if anything, I just want to dispel the illusion that black liberationism is this kind of weird, like, anti-white racist bullshit they seem to promote. Because I think that's what motivates a lot of their politics, you know? I'm trying to, like, cut through that a bit. But I think I advocate for, like, the good elements fit. To the extent that I don't think anyone in my audience thinks that, like, all black liberationism is just, like, Professor Flowers tier bullshit.
What I would say is that you definitely advocate for things that benefit black people. Obviously, since you address and talk a lot about the problems in the current system and the like, but you're talking about the sociological elements, economic elements that are, like, harmful, but nothing from the perspective or ideologies of black liberation. But you are engaging with the perspective and ideology of people of the black liberation movement who are the worst.
Well, I don't think they're really of the black liberation movement, right? I mean, I haven't...
Well, they're particularly terrible elements of it, right?
Right, like, right.
Black people are figuring out and have been in conversation about this, and I don't want to no-truth Scotsman this shit, right?
I'm okay with no-truth Scotsman, yeah. And I think that black people kind of figured it out, too. Like, the black community was, like, giving Marcus Garvey shit over 100 years ago. I feel like this has always just been a loud element. There are always going to be people who will abuse the language of marginalization to promote hate. It's a really good way of adopting a victim mentality to lash out against others, because they actually are victims, you know. It's an effective rhetorical stance to take. But there are lots of affirmative positions for which I don't have people on. I don't have people on, for example, to talk about feminism. Like, I'm a feminist. Yeah. I argue against anti-feminism all the time, but I don't really have people on to talk about positions with which I agree. And I feel like it would be patronizing for me to go, like, okay, well, I covered one bad black person. Now I need to have a good black person on to, like, balance it. Like, you know, I have to go, like, looking through my inbox or whatever. It feels kind of patronizing. I'd rather just advocate for the ideas that I think are good and tear down the ones I think are bad.
Well, my particular problem is that covering those particular sections of any minority liberation movement, but in this case, black liberation movements, without really giving perspective on the rest, from without having, like, to an audience that doesn't have a understanding of these things, they just have an understanding of the sociological area of it, will give a warped idea about what the heck is going on there.
I guess. And I feel like I handle it, though. I mean, I feel like the big problem here is that the left doesn't do enough to excise people like Professor Flowers from their midst, you know? If anyone's giving the idea that, you know, black liberationism is full of anti-white racism, it's them. I feel like there are very few people pushing back against it. This is what led to tariffs being a big thing.
I generally feel those people are a minority, a loud minority, but a minority nonetheless.
An unchallenged minority.
Yes.
Which is an issue.
I would definitely concede that the fact that they're being unchallenged is a serious problem. That's for certain.
Well, Nazis are a loud minority, right? I mean, they've got to be like a fraction of a percent of the United States, but I think it's important to address the bad ideas here. The only frustration...
Yeah, Nazis are different because they could literally take power. It's a very real threat.
Well, I don't like that, because then it's like you get to have the bad ideology as long as you're not powerful enough to do the bad ideology, you know? I agree that Nazis are more of a real problem, but in terms of addressing, like, bad ideas, I think it's important to be holistic about it. Because, keep in mind, this is what led to the TERFs, right? There were a ton of feminists, mostly, like, second-wave feminists, who were very anti-men. They were, like, unironically misandrist. And the left didn't care. Nobody on the left cared. Everyone thought it was just a joke. And then it turns out that when you essentialize man bad, they turn out to be transphobes against trans women. And now the left cares. And which is frustrating, because, like, well, no, they were hateful before. You just didn't care because it was being directed against a group that you thought were immune to the effects. But hate always finds a way to make the world worse. We should always stand up against it.
I would like to know that a lot of TERFs, like, are just conservatives in disguise. Like the central TERF movement is pretty awful. Well, TERFs, like, are pretty awful, but a lot of the impetus behind the actual political power that comes behind it is just that conservatives co-opted it to do even further harm because they actually have power. It's not that TERFs gain power, it is that conservatives use those excuses to enact conservative to use their power.
I don't disagree, but you do acknowledge that a ton of prominent TERFs, especially earlier on before the whole TERF thing became widely known, were prominent feminists who had, there were warning signs for decades before, but nobody really took them seriously. Is Andrea Dworkin still alive? Hold on, I actually don't know that. Dworkin seems like a candidate. No, died 2013. No, wait, that's Ronald Dworkin. Andrea Dworkin seems like the kind of person who would have died April 2005. Yeah, who would have been like a raging transphobe now, at least from what I know about her.
There's a lot of absolutely fucking crazy shit in the, like, anti-men feminist side. Including some that were obviously, well, that had a very strong trans man vibes and didn't.
Oh, she was pro trans. Right, people them. In chat are saying she's pro trans. Sorry, she wrote some stuff that it was definitely pretty weird. She was one of those political lesbians. So, anyway, sorry.
But the thing that I would be advocating here, the thing that I'm advocating here, is that you have a particular reach, and you definitely can bring people who are educated on the subject to talk about things that go past what you talk in your channel. That's something that you can do. And that not doing so and covering Black issues gives a word perspective, because I know you have good positions on like Black issues regarding sociologics and like sociological stuff and economics, but that doesn't go past, that doesn't go into like ideologies of Black liberation, and you're addressing particularly bad elements of
I guess the conversation. This seems like a non-falsifiable point, because I feel like I advocate for the good sides of things, and when I talked to Professor Flowers and talked afterwards as well, like, I made it clear that this wasn't representative of the whole, like, ideology she was claiming. The problem that I have is, like, I'm trying to say, hey, these guys don't represent Black liberationism, and then the entire online left turns to me and say, yes, she does. I'm having a very difficult time, and it's hell with the conservatives too. You should see all the emails that I get from Nazis or whatever, being like, now you know, they really do just hate white people. God, you can only imagine. Because I do think Professor Flowers just hates white people, you know. I do think, yeah, that's not impossible. There are plenty of people who just hate people based on race. It's called racism. It's unfortunately quite common. And
that's every wild takes. I 100% agree.
Yeah, and when I fight back against this stuff, like, I can feel like the looming eyes of the entire online conservative movement on the back of my neck, because the rest of the left never addresses this stuff, you know? They keep quiet about it, which I think is really dumb. It allows it to fester. And then I address it, and I want to say, like, this is just a very small minority. This isn't a big, like, deal. This isn't representative of the entire online left. But everyone on the left needs to push back against that, because otherwise they would implicate themselves. And it's like really difficult. I feel like the only way out is through. We have to be so aggressively against these ideas. We have to stigmatize them so harshly that everyone who advocates for them either has their why I left the left moment, or they like leave the internet. And then like maybe the left really won't have a bunch of people who masquerade as Black liberationists when they're just anti-white racists. But right now, like, I don't know. What are we promoting?
I think that it is good to keep in mind that the online left is a fucking bizarre world. I'll this kind of like almost closed space of what we consider the online left, right? Like YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and all that kind of stuff is fucking bizarre compared to the kinds of things that a lot of like progressive people and leftist people that are out there doing. This is something that I feel you're generally aware of. And that there's definitely there are issues with like some problematic ideology within the Black spaces. But it is not like the entirety or like even a significant amount of like left-wing people or progressives are just sitting uncritically behind these people. There's a reason why these things are not making it higher into like the progressive or leftist power structures.
Well, I agree with that. It's just, you know, I have to work with the deck that I'm given, and the deck that I'm given is that the online left is shit. So it's, you know, I do want to push back against this more. Keep in mind, after Professor Flowers, I did have an actual indigenous activist come on, a person who's actually indigenous and actually understands. That's good, because like they were really cool, but I don't really like doing those types of interviews because I don't just like agreeing with people. I like tearing into bad people.
You learn things?
Yeah, I learned some things. I mean, I'm more well-read on these subjects than a lot of people give me credit for. You know, I consume a lot of information off stream.
That your audience benefited from that?
Sure, but like, they could from like watching other podcasts too and stuff, you know? I just get bored talking to people in a friendly context sometimes. Though she was really cool. She was fun to talk to. But that's an anomaly. You never know who's going to be fun or not. Sometimes you're just boring. And with Black stuff too, oh God, you can make jokes about like, here's the issue, okay? She had a good sense of humor. I can't have a conversation about like black issues with a black progressive without being able to make jokes about race. All right. I would die.
Lose your fucking mind.
I would get so fucking bored. Oh my God. I just sitting here with like nothing to say, like, yeah, slavery was bad. Yeah. Things were, it's like, I can't do it, you know, but like most people are humorless fucks. And most of the people who aren't humorless fucks can't make jokes with me because they think I'm secretly racist. So if they make jokes with me, they think I'm dog whistling or whatever. So yeah, it's something that I want to work on. It's just really difficult to get the balance down, you know, fine-tuned.
Yeah, that's my particular concern. I know that it is not something that can be like empirically proven with statistics, but it is something that people are generally concerned regarding more popular voices who are not the most well-versed in those particular topics being people who can control part of the conversation or have a disproportionate amount of influence in the conversation. Because, you know, you're a significantly loud voice in the online left, in the bizarre world of online left. So I'm concerned about what your coverage of these things can influence.
I'm happy to lead the Black Liberation Movement, the online left.
Yes, that's what I was asking.
Whatever direction things head, I do hope my audience understands that the reason things are the way they are right now on the online left isn't because Black people are like super racist, and it's not because Black liberation theory is bad. It's because leftists online are fucking... That's basically going to be like the running theme of any argument that I have with the rest of the online left. But that's like the big distinction there. That's it. Like that, like you have this rich centuries-long history of Black liberation theory that's so smart and so well thought out and so empirically and ideologically defensible. And then you go online and you have 13-year-old white guilt-ridden fuckwits who are signal boosting the loudest, angriest, least well-read so-called advocates for racial equality who are just spouting off whatever gets them the most likes or hits or whatever. Please do keep that in mind, okay? To my wonderful community there.
Yeah, those things that you're talking about, you know, like how rich like Black philosophy and like Black liberation ideologies are, I don't want it to become like a platform that just covers these things. I just want that to be in some way like feature, even point people at things like that rather than vaguely gesture at it, even though you are very specifically putting on screen and engaging with people who are the opposite of that.
Yeah, I think I could do that. Yeah, it's probably good to reinforce that.
All right, I would be more okay with that.
I'll make a strong effort to do that. I think that's a good compromise. Yeah.
Okay, I'm happy with that.
I'll do my best. It's definitely better than like every time I have an argument with a Black person, I have to have like a positive conversation with a Black person. That'd be a very difficult ratio to maintain.
I'll be more okay. Like, you have the reach, you have certain, you have people that could probably point you at cool stuff and just be like, hey, this is a good video. Hey, you know, like, just watch this cool shit. I don't know. Just point the stuff. I don't know. You have a big reach and it would do a lot.
I'll make a determined effort.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking the time. I am going to listen to Matt Walsh call me trans, apparently.
I have one small thing that I have to say.
Hit me up.
It is, this comes from a place of love.
Mm-hmm.
I want to show your videos to other people because I think you're really, really funny.
Mm-hmm.
But your
gamer language.
Your ableism arc is very, very cringy.
It's only cringy to the wrong people. Now my videos are easier to show to 14-year-old white gamers. Cause now they'll think I'm cool, you know?
Depends on the audience, I guess. Cause the amount of times that I have to skip things in your video because it feels lazy and overused so much when you just start insulting people that way. And I am like, you just had like 20 seconds before you had something really funny. And I'm like, fuck yeah, this is hilarious. I'm going to link this video. And then you just go off with that. It's like a fucking hell, I guess. I can't show this to anyone.
Do you mean saying, or do you just mean like anytime I say somebody's brain is melting through their ears or something?
The more egregious stuff, right? Like the R slurs and all that kind of stuff.
I mostly find it funny because of how like hard the online left has to fake their offense at it. I refuse to believe that most of the people who freak out in chat actually experience any offense. They're just like acting on ingrained, built-in lib offense reactors, you know? It's like the same. I feel like it's some kind of ableism equivalent of a white woman like clutching her pearls as like one light skin, one dark skin black guy fist bump and call each other like the N word with a soft A. You know what I mean? Like I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like to me. I don't know. I feel like a lot of people are very weird about it.
I don't think that you should use those words just to trigger the libs, right?
Triggering the libs. Can't it just be an authentic expression of my animosity towards civility politics?
It's very similar, but I understand the distinction. I just say that there's a lot of people that I know that are genuinely feel discomfort regarding a lot of the words they use. I also do, not because I feel offended, but because I feel it is just exceptionally unfunny and childish.
What about when I can I do that? Because I've sucked dick. I mean, where's the pass, right?
Yeah, I think that a lot of times it's pretty funny though.
Well, where's the line there? It's really about which groups we're exposed to, right? Because I'm willing to bet you have queer friends who say fag jokingly a lot, but you don't have edgy gamer friends who say retard a lot.
No, definitely. I do have queer friends. We don't use that word, but I'm pretty sure a lot of them would find it more funny, for sure. That's
leftist hypocrisy. For certain.
That's for certain. I'm talking from my perspective here. I'm not talking about, like, what would make, like, the best thing. It's my personal thing. Like, I think that the ableism makes it very hard and to share videos when it's on all so many videos. And I want to share your videos all the time because they're really funny. I laugh all the time. And when my spouse is like looks at me weird, I'm like, I want to show them. But 20 seconds after the funny thing, you just go off. Going, talking about IQ and how the person is this and that. And I'm like,
Oh, I can't stop with the IQ jokes.
I guess the IQ jokes are abstracted enough.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, comfort and discomfort with stuff like this is always going to come down to which types of humor you were exposed to and which you grew out of or whatever.
I'm just talking about myself, right?
No, I get that. Like, I think a lot of people associate it with a kind of, like, unfunny, disaffected, like, Leafy is here tier, like, 14-year-olds playing CSGO and calling, like, people racial slurs over the webcam or, like, mic or whatever. The issue to me is that I never participated in those communities when I was younger. I didn't actually say that much when I was younger. And then I got exposed to the online left, and I was one of those, like, petulant woke scolds who wouldn't even say, like, idiot for a while. And now it's funny to me again because I've grown out of that. So it really depends on where you associate these groups and, like, where, like, what era of your, you know, I guess, social development, like, the introduction took place in.
Yeah, I would like to say that, you know, I know a significant amount of people on the left have issues with you, but we know that a good amount of them are not just going to come around because you stop using it. There was a time before in which I know you made an attempt to stop using those words, and you were still very funny. And I, in my heart of hearts, believe that you're able to do it should you wish to. I believe in you.
I appreciate your faith. I never thought the issue at hand was whether I could be funny. I always thought that I had that down on pat. But I'll keep in mind that I always have alternatives that I can defer to.
If you do, I'll be able to share your videos with the rest of my family, and it would be really funny.
The real solution. The real solution that you need is you need to keep getting YouTube to be really bad with their video content reviews. Because right now they're taking 2 weeks to get to a video review, which means that if I have any bad words at all in a video, it auto flags and I just have to send it out with like no ad revenue. So right now, the only thing keeping me from saying bad words more often is the profit motive due to 1984 channel TOS restrictions. Maybe that really is the way forward.
Wait, doesn't that go against my interest?
Well, no, because that would mean I say it less, right? So I can make the money.
That's true. I guess, yeah.
Yeah, big difference between a debate video getting $2,000 and $20. Fairly meaningful distinction. Anyway, I do appreciate you coming on. I will, as always, make an effort to reassess my my priors when it comes to humor.
Thank you. I thank you for the conversation.
Of course.
Take care.
Take care.